We'll move to our second case this morning. Jonathan Aguirre-Zuniga against Garland. All right, I see Mr. Zaidi on Zoom. Can you hear me? All right, great.
I can, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Katz is here in the courtroom, so you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Adam Katz, and I represent the petitioner, Jonathan Aguirre-Zuniga.
Mr. Katz, could you keep your voice up a little bit?
Yes.
That doesn't amplify, it just records.
Got it. My name is Adam Katz, and I represent the petitioner, Jonathan Aguirre-Zuniga. The immigration judge and board held that despite the overbreadth of the Indiana statute under which Mr. Aguirre was convicted, he was nonetheless obligated to satisfy the realistic probability test. That reasoning is inconsistent with this court's case law, contrary to rulings from 9 different circuits, and not defended by the government on this appeal. Instead, the government argues that the board's error was harmless because the Indiana statute is not overbroad after all. The government is incorrect, and this court should vacate the board's decision. The Indiana statute is indeed broader than its federal counterpart, and therefore does not qualify as an aggravated felony.
That's only if it implicitly includes the Schedule 2 definition, right? If I understand your argument correctly?
That's correct, Your Honor. So specifically, the Indiana statute it's broader than its federal counterpart because it includes all isomers of methamphetamine, whereas the federal statute is limited to just optical isomers.
Well, it actually doesn't on its face. 1.1 does not incorporate that Schedule 2 definition.
So, Your Honor, certainly that's the government's argument, is that because there is not an explicit cross-reference to Schedule 2, the statute of conviction does not incorporate the definition from the schedules. But unlike the statute at issue in De La Torre, there's nothing to disambiguate here. The only definition of methamphetamine provided by the Indiana Code is found in the drug schedules. And so, as this court said in De La Torre, the lodestar of statutory interpretation in Indiana is legislative intent, and every sign of intent in this case points to applying the legislature's only definition of methamphetamine to a statute covering methamphetamine. And second, Your Honors, because the government has not proposed any alternative definition of the key statutory term, that is the word methamphetamine, the government has not met its statutory burden to establish a basis for removability by clear and convincing evidence. And the final point I'd like to cover today is the government's brief conflates two distinct concepts. The government suggests that Mr. Aguirre relies upon legal imagination to demonstrate the overbreadth of the Indiana statute, but what the government calls legal imagination is actually just statutory interpretation. And when statutory interpretation demonstrates the overbreadth of a state statute, the realistic probability test does not apply. Starting with the intent of the legislature, Your Honor, it's well established as an interpretive principle that when identical terms are used in different parts of the same act, those words are presumed to have the same meaning. Here, the statute of conviction covers methamphetamine, and that word, methamphetamine, is defined once and just once anywhere in the Indiana Controlled Substances Act. That definition, as this court knows, is the same definition that this court has already found overbroad in United States versus De La Torre.
Well, only by reference to a different section of the Indiana Drug Code that does incorporate the Schedule II definition. There's a specific cross-reference in the statute that was at issue in De La Torre.
That's correct, Your Honor, and there's a perfectly good explanation for why the De La Torre statute includes a cross-reference and this statute does not. The De La Torre statute, 3548.42, refers to controlled substances, which in turn is defined as substances on one of Indiana's 5 controlled substance schedules. And so in order for the legislature to limit that definition and make clear what it was actually referring to, it of course had to say we're only covering substances on Schedules 1, 2, and 3, with some exceptions for Schedule 1, whereas here, methamphetamine is only included in one place on one schedule, and there's no other definition or ambiguity to clarify. And, Your Honors, I'd point this court to the close relationship between Well, first of all, the government has provided no good reason to ignore the presumption that like terms are to be treated alike and to instead assume that the Indiana legislature intended to fracture the meaning of the word methamphetamine throughout the same act.
Well, there's another principle of statutory interpretation that when a term is undefined, it's given its common and ordinary meaning.
That's correct, Your Honor, but as this court said in De La Torre, the isomeric nature of methamphetamine is not something that's generally known. And here, the legislature has told us exactly what it means when it says methamphetamine.
When that definition is implicated. And the government's argument is that it's not here because this is a completely separate statute that doesn't cross-reference the definition schedules, doesn't cross-reference the schedules at all. It just says that a person who knowingly or intentionally delivers methamphetamine, pure or adulterated, is guilty of this level 5 felony. So why wouldn't we just use the street definition?
So, Your Honor, of course we agree that the government's argument is to separate the definition in the schedules from the statute of conviction, but I'd like to point this court to the close relationship between the definition in the schedules and the statute of conviction. The definition of methamphetamine is found in Chapter 2 of Article 48, in which the legislature classified various controlled substances. The statute of conviction is found in Chapter 4 of Article 48, and that's where the legislature operationalize those same controlled substances into offense conduct. And so when the legislature is referring to a controlled substance or a drug in Chapter 4, it's not referring to some new category of controlled substances, but simply describing conduct that is illegal with respect to those same controlled substances in Chapter 2. And the structure of the act reinforces that interpretation. As this court said in De La Torre, the overarching structure of the Indiana Controlled Substances Act should guide the court's conclusion without a selective reading of individual words. And in that case, what that wide-angle view revealed is that the Indiana legislature has taken great care to precisely define controlled substances, including at the isomeric level. And just to put the court's observation in perspective, Chapter 4, which contains the statute of conviction, provides standalone offenses for narcotic drugs, cocaine, methamphetamine, marijuana, hash oil, hashish, salvia, smokable hemp, ephedrine, and pseudoephedrine, and according to the government, the only one of those substances that does not have a statutory definition is methamphetamine. Now, we'd submit that the more rational inference is that methamphetamine, like all of those other substances, is indeed defined, and that the legislature intended its definition to apply to the statute of conviction.
Then what work is the 1.1 doing? The 1.1 statute. It's a different classification of felony, right? It's a level 5, the broader version that does incorporate the controlled substances schedule is a level 6, right?
So, Your Honor, we'd point the court to the fact that cocaine is treated the exact same way. So in 3548.41, which covers cocaine and narcotic drugs and cocaine's isomers, that's a level 5 felony, and 3548.42, which also covers cocaine and its isomers, is a level 6 felony. And so there's nothing unusual about Indiana and nothing duplicative about Indiana covering these two, providing two offenses that cover overlapping conduct.
Does the cocaine statute cross-reference the schedules? Definitions?
It does, Your Honor, and the reason...
So it's not like this one.
So, Your Honor, the reason why the cocaine statute cross-references the schedules is because that statute also includes narcotic drugs. And narcotic drugs span all 5 controlled substance schedules.
And okay, so we can't really draw much information about how to interpret this statute from that one, since there's such a big difference.
Well, Your Honor, I'm only responding to your point about whether or not 3548.41 is duplicative. And the point is that cocaine is treated the exact same way. You're correct, of course, that 3548.41 does contain this cross-reference, but our position is that that cross-reference is designed to disambiguate narcotic drugs and not cocaine. And to just circle back to your question about what work, then, is the statute of conviction here doing, as we pointed out in our brief, the legislative history strongly suggests that the statute of conviction was first introduced in order to provide more accurate information on methamphetamine arrests. And so by separating it, as we explained previously, it was part of an omnibus provision that included cocaine and narcotic drugs, and it was separated out in order to track methamphetamine crimes more accurately. And so, Judge Flom, do you have a question?
No, that's fine.
So, Your Honor, turning to the government's waiver, this court should feel confident that there is no reasonable alternative to that straightforward application of the legislature's definition to the statute of conviction. And that's true, Your Honors, because among other reasons, these proceedings have been ongoing for almost 2 years, and the question has boiled down to this narrow question of what does the statute mean when it says methamphetamine. And the government has not told this court what it thinks the word methamphetamine in the statute of conviction means. And to be clear, that waiver, irrespective of the correctness of Mr. Aguirre's interpretation, is dispositive. The government bears the burden of establishing a basis for removability by clear and convincing evidence, and the government has never denied that it bears that burden. And whatever that burden entails, it must at least require the government, if it's going to say that a state crime is a federal removal predicate, to actually tell the court what the state crime covers. In other words, Your Honors, it's not enough for the government to respond to Mr. Aguirre by saying that they disagree. And that's particularly true in Indiana, where a statute is not even considered ambiguous unless there is more than one reasonable interpretation presented to the court. And here, in a very literal sense, there is only one interpretation at all. And to take a step back, the government's silence on this issue doesn't change the fact that there are a limited number of ways that this word, methamphetamine, can be defined. And only one of those ways is plausible. As we laid out in our reply brief, there are essentially four options. The first would be to apply the legislature's definition of methamphetamine. That's Mr. Aguirre's position and the interpretation adopted by both the board and the immigration judge. The second option would be to exclude all isomers of methamphetamine. This is the position that the government took before the agency, and we'd point the court to pages 18, 478, 710, and 714 of the administrative record. And we don't know, but we suspect that the government has abandoned this argument on appeal because it's foreclosed not only by the legal principles we've cited, but by undisputed scientific facts in the record. Methamphetamine is itself comprised of isomers, such that excluding all isomers would leave nothing behind in the definition. The third option would be to include some isomers and not others. The problem with this interpretation is it has no footing in the text of the statute, and further, it's entirely inconsistent with the care with which the Indiana legislature went about defining controlled substance terms. And I'm running out of time, but just to very quickly finish out, the fourth and final option would be to say that methamphetamine has no fixed definition at all, but that would walk this court into easily avoidable vagueness problems, and the Supreme Court has long held that given the choice between a constitutionally infirm interpretation and a constitutionally firm interpretation, courts should take every reasonable measure to adopt the latter. I've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal unless Your Honor has further questions.
That's fine. Thank you. All right, Mr. Zaidi, did I pronounce that correctly?
Very, very close, Judge Sykes. It's Zaidi.
Okay.
You may proceed. Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Imran Zaidi for the Attorney General. The sole question before this court is whether under the categorical approach, an Indiana methamphetamine statute matches federal law in its definition of methamphetamine. And in particular, petitioner here argues that this Indiana meth statute defines meth to include positional isomers and is thus broader than the federal definition, which is limited to optical isomers. Now, both parties agree there are only two ways to show this statute is overbroad under the categorical approach. Either by showing by that a statute by its plain and unambiguous terms extends more broadly than federal law, an approach courts often refer to as facial overbreath, or under the realistic probability test by showing that a state has in fact applied a statute in the overbroad manner suggested. Here, that would mean showing that Indiana has prosecuted positional isomers of methamphetamine.
Actually, I have a question about the applicability of the realistic probability test in this context. The Supreme Court in the Shuler case, discussed in De La Torre, seemed to clarify that the realistic probability test, or at least separated the categorical approach into two aspects. One applies to enumerated offenses in federal law and the generic offense analysis, and then realistic probability test has arisen in that context. But this is a conduct-based categorical approach, as Shuler described the different aspects of the categorical approach, not an enumerated offense, generic federal offense.
Well, Judge Sykes, I believe De La Torre arose in the context of, I want to say, a serious drug felony. I can't remember the exact sentence enhancement ground, but that was a different provision. So that was a conduct.
They all fall within the Shuler category of conduct-based federal offenses, where the comparison is elements to elements, state crime to the federal crime. It's not a generic definition that the court has created, because the statute at issue is an enumerated offense. The classic example being burglary, of course, in the ACCA. I think you understand what I'm driving at here. There's a distinction between the categorical approach as applied to enumerated offenses in federal law that require the court to define the generic crime and then do the comparison. The realistic probability test arose in that context. It doesn't really apply here.
Well, and no, Your Honor, it's certainly not how we address this in our brief. I don't think Shuler or De La Torre somehow keeps the realistic probability test from applying here. We're still looking at the realistic probability test applies where the categorical approach applies, unless you have a conduct-based circumstance like what you're mentioning with Shuler, where the terms of the statute suggest that you're focusing not on an offense, but on some conduct. So where you have words like involving or relating to or something suggesting that you can focus on the conduct of the offense or the sort of circumstances there and not just matching elements to elements. So we didn't understand, and we don't understand De La Torre to suggest that in this context that we're talking about here, certainly, drug trafficking crimes under the INA, where you're looking at whether something can be punishable as a felony under the Controlled Substance Act. That's the ultimate question we're asking, right? Is whether this is punishable as a felony. We don't understand that to fall somehow outside of the realistic probability approach or the way that Shuler may have suggested in a different context. So I don't think either parties has been operating under the assumption here that we are somehow outside of the realistic probability approach. We are looking at classic categorical approach, and we don't have the sort of Shuler context where conduct would come into play and take us outside of that strict elements to elements matching.
Well, right, but the thrust of the De La Torre case is that once the elements are a mismatch, that's the end of the inquiry. We don't ask whether there's a realistic probability that the state might prosecute under one of the overbroad options in the state statute. And that's why I'm asking the question. When we're in the zone of a conduct-based categorical approach rather than an enumerated offense where the federal court is conjuring a generic set of elements for the generic offense and then performing the matching exercise, we're dealing with a set of federal elements that define a controlled substances violation of this sort.
Yes.
That falls into the conduct-based inquiry under Shuler, just as it did in De La Torre.
Right. I think the answer to your question, I think the reason maybe I'm understanding this differently is because I think even maybe to get to your question more directly, even under an elements approach, when we match these statutes, element to element, you would still turn to the realistic probability test here, because on the elements, nobody's suggesting, neither party here is suggesting that ice of methamphetamine in this definition. So just matching the drug and everything else in the statute here, deliver matches up with distribute. Petitioner does not dispute that. Pure or unadulterated is not a mismatch to the CSA. So the only assertion here in terms of overbreath is that this statute includes positional isomers.
Well, so, if the realistic probability test applied in this context, De La Torre would have come out differently.
Well, Your Honor, no, that's not true under this court's reasoning in De La Torre, right? Because the realistic probability test only applies when a statute is not overbroad on its face. De La Torre found that, well, the that statute clearly referred to the schedules, which clearly referred to isomers. And then this court went on to define isomers to include positional, geometric, and optical. So it did not need to turn to the realistic probability test.
I don't think that's right. The realistic probability test is essentially a savings test. If a state statute is overbroad, then the conviction still might count for whatever purposes it's being used. Here, deportation, more commonly recidivism, right?
Correct.
It still counts if there's no realistic probability that the state would prosecute under one of these bizarre options that doesn't fit the federal crime.
Correct.
Right.
But that only applies. So, and this goes to your point about De La Torre, you only turn to that approach if you don't have a statute that is facially overbroad. And the reason that De La Torre was facially overbroad is because there you were referring to the Schedule II listing of methamphetamine.
No, if the statute isn't facially overbroad, that's the end of the inquiry. There's no reason for an inquiry into realistic probability of prosecution. If it's a match, it's a match. And the conviction counts for whatever purposes.
Sure, of course, Your Honor. And our position is that it's not a match because the statute itself needs to include the term explicitly or in some way, as your questions to opposing counsel suggested, cross-reference, a definition, something in the drug code to suggest that when
you're blending your other argument about this 1.1 offense doesn't cross-reference the schedules, so it is a categorical match.
It's yes, that's the argument here. And I think when you say cross-reference, there's several ways to do it. And I want to be very clear. We are not just saying that this statute doesn't have isomers. That's the end of the question. There are several obvious ways that a state can define a substance in its code to include something listed elsewhere. Cocaine might be the best example. Opposing counsel listed this just now, and he said that cocaine references to the schedules, and you, Judge Sykes, said, well, that distinguishes it from our circumstances. It's actually even worse. Cocaine has a definition in the code. That's why it's different from our circumstances. As opposing counsel said, it's the exact same circumstances where you have an offense that has a specific provision and then is punished under the general schedules. And yet there you have Indiana having defined cocaine, offered a definitional provision so that wherever it is listed in the code, you know what it means.
Well, can we go back to meth specifically? What is the government's definition of methamphetamine under this Indiana statute? If your position is we are not to refer to the schedules, what's the definition of meth that you are looking to?
Your Honor, the government's position here is that meth means meth unless anything in the statute suggests otherwise. And meth means meth.
What does meth mean?
Meth means the street definition of meth, which is optical isomers, the L&D isomers, which the government mentioned, in our brief. That has always been the sort of street and general understanding of what methamphetamine means, so that this court or any court would only get beyond that definition if something in a state statute actually lists anything explicitly beyond optical isomers. So for instance, in Lorenzo and Rodriguez-Gamboa in the Ninth Circuit, the reason I think federal courts are now starting to inquire as to the specific isomeric composition of methamphetamine started because California, in its statute, defined meth specifically to include both optical and geometric isomers.
Where do you find the Indiana legislature saying the definition of meth is the street definition of meth, and here's what the street definition of meth is?
It does not, Judge Jackson. To be very clear, our position here we do not need to supply affirmatively exactly what methamphetamine's isomeric composition is. Our position is that meth word is referred to in the statute means meth as it has always been understood, which is the optical isomers, the L and the D isomers. This idea of it extending beyond those terms, you can only start that analysis, you must start that analysis with the terms of the statute itself. And if it does not include either geometric or now positional, now that we know geometric don't exist, if a statute does not include either of those terms, then you must turn to the realistic probability test to supply that definition, or to supply whether or not the state actually punishes those. So to your question directly, we don't supply an affirmative definition. We are completely fine with that, because under the categorical approach, you need to have some indication that starts in the statute that a state is actually punishing more than just optical isomers of methamphetamine. And I'll note that this court in De La Torre suggested as much, because it dealt with the specific argument that the statute we're dealing with here should be treated identically to the statute in De La Torre. And it said, we're not convinced that that interpretation is correct. We suspect that's because, again, this meth statute does not use the word isomers. It does not refer to Schedule II, and it does not have, the Indiana Code does not have a definitional provision for methamphetamine, unlike, for instance, cocaine. Now, I also want to note, Your Honors, that we flagged this in our brief. Indiana has since De La Torre, since that decision, amended its definition to make clear that it means to cover only optical isomers of methamphetamine. So that doesn't apply here technically, in terms of it didn't go into effect until after the offense here, but it's very important to our interpretation of the statute here, because if this court does feel like it needs to define isomers or somehow read that into the statute and then figure out exactly what isomers that might mean, if it does, well, now we have a very clear expression from the Indiana legislature of what it means isomer to extend to, and that's only optical isomers, which of course matches the federal definition. Now, the clear differences between De La Torre in this case are exactly what I just mentioned in terms of this statute being methamphetamine, pure or unadulterated, nothing more. And that pure or unadulterated itself is an important caveat here, because if this court really wanted to, or if Indiana, really wanted to limit its definition of meth to exactly what it referred to elsewhere in the statute, like in the schedules, it would have just said meth. It started to actually define the term itself in our statute here by saying methamphetamine, pure or unadulterated, but it did not list isomers. So at a minimum, our argument is this. We are not saying that this court needs to find that these statutes have different meanings. We are saying that at a minimum, it is not clear that they have the same definition. And that is the showing that petitioner needs to make to show that the statute is facially overbroad. If there are no other questions, Your Honor, we ask the court find that this statute is not facially overbroad and turn to the realistic probability test and show that the statute very clearly that does not have isomers, very clearly cannot extend it specifically to positional isomers of meth, and ask that the court deny this petition for review.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Katz.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to make two very quick points. The first is in response to the government's point that meth just means meth. It's important to disentangle two aspects of that. Whether there's a scientific consensus as to the isomeric scope of methamphetamine is one question. Whether it's self-explanatory for a criminal statute to use the word methamphetamine is a very different question and the operative question. And we point the court to the fact that all three states in the Seventh Circuit define methamphetamine differently, and all three of those states in turn define methamphetamine differently than the federal government. And so meth just means meth is not an answer. The question is, what does Indiana mean when it says meth? And the government said, well, Indiana started to define it with this phrase pure or adulterated, but we know with absolute certainty that pure or adulterated is not a definition, because those same words are in the De La Torre statute, which was found overbroad.
Does anything about this chemistry project have anything whatsoever to do with the policies behind the immigration code and eligibility for and the propriety of removal or relief from removal? I mean, this makes my head explode, because I don't see how it has anything to do with whether someone should be removed or not removed.
We, of course, acknowledge, Your Honor, that the categorical approach can and often is divorced from the facts of a specific case, and sometimes seemingly divorced from the policy behind a statute. But let me respond in this way. The value that this enforces, or the value that this promotes, is predictability in, among other things, say, defense counsel representing
Mr. Aguirre. Is this predictable?
Aguirre.
You've got to be kidding me.
Well,
let me respond. There's nothing predictable about this. It's
arbitrary. These are arbitrary distinctions that we make in all these cases. It's just, you know, based on legal definitions that have not a lot of real world consequence.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, again, we don't deny that these are very small differences. There's no evidence in the record, for example, that Mr. Aguirre was advised that taking this plea versus the delatory statute plea would lead to, according to the government, drastically different removal consequences.
And that's an extremely valid point.
Just one last point, Your Honors. I see my time is very low. The government said that it does not need to provide an affirmative definition of methamphetamine, and with all due respect to the government, that simply cannot be correct, that the government can meet its burden for saying that a state crime can remove someone from the country automatically as an aggravated felon without telling this court what the statute means, unless the court has any further questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.